This is 1A. I'm Jen White in Washington. When stay-at-home orders first began last year, a lot of us started doing things that were a little out of the ordinary. Maybe it was texting an ex, or watching a show about the eccentric world of tiger breeders, or even getting invested in unverified celebrity gossip. Over the last year, the Instagram account Dumois has become a destination for users looking to escape the monotony of pandemic life through a hit of celebrity gossip. The account started with 45,000 followers last March. Now it has over 945,000 followers. Here's how it works. A user submits a tip about a celebrity, whether it's a sighting or a budding relationship or an upcoming project, and Dumois acts as a human message board. The account's creator is anonymous and intends to keep it that way, but she agreed to talk with us about being the wizard behind the digital curtain. To protect her identity and add a little mystery, we allowed her to use a voice distortion app. And we started off by asking, what's behind the choice to be anonymous?
That's just a choice that I've made from the beginning that the account was created in 2013. It has nothing really to do with what the account became because it has evolved over time. Obviously, it became super popular only in 2020. So what a lot of people don't know is that I've had the account for 7 years before this and was anonymous. It wasn't an account about who I was personally. So I just continued that and planned to.
Why do you think people have become so invested in celebrity gossip during the pandemic specifically?
I think that it was a distraction for people who were home and scared and not knowing what was going to happen next. And it was just something that they responded to. It was a community of people that came together. And in the beginning, it was a very sort of tight community of people that liked to log on and read this type of gossip as a distraction for what was going on in the world.
Well, your posts are unverified, but you've become a big source for entertainment reporters. What are some of the biggest stories you've broken?
Well, I just broke Ariana Grande's wedding last week. Some neighbors wrote in that they had seen trucks and different sort of, I guess, wedding paraphernalia being loaded into her house. And it turned out she did get married last weekend in Montecito. So that was one. Scarlett Johansson and Colin Jost's wedding was another that was sort of revealed in the same sort of fashion. Neighbors had seen them setting up at their private residence. So that was one as well. Also, Jen and Bela, I call them Bela, I meant J-Lo and Ben jetting off to Montana. That was also a tip that was first posted on my account.
And in that curation process, how do you decide what makes it in and what doesn't?
Well, I will say that I do have my own vetting process, but I don't reveal what that is because I think that if I did, people would use that to their advantage to submit fake information, which they do. And I also wouldn't want to compromise any of my sources. So I keep my vetting process, you know, very sort of under wraps for those reasons. People don't think I have one, but I'm here to tell you that I do. I mean, you know, I'm not an idiot. I do sort of look in a little bit to what people submit. Sometimes something totally fake will slip through the cracks, but you know, that comes with the territory of doing everything sort of digitally. Everything is submitted through email, DM, or text message.
When something does slip through the cracks, how do you think about that in the aftermath? Do you have a process for dealing with that?
I say, hey guys, this was wrong. I got this wrong. I'm not afraid to admit that I was wrong about posting something. I'm human.
Well, something the Dumois account and 1A have in common is that we really are powered by audience engagement. So I want to spend the rest of our conversation getting to questions people submitted to us for you. Tina asks on Instagram, how many hours a day do you spend on this?
8 to 10 hours.
So this is full time.
It's full time, but it's not a full time job. So I guess I would say 2 full-time jobs.
And can you give us any insight into whether Dumois is a singular or a collective?
No, sorry, I can't.
Okay, Ariel asks, what criteria, if any, does Dumois use to determine the credibility of anonymous tips? What's the decision-making process behind posting or not posting? Now, I know you don't want to get into the specifics of your process, but can you tell us anything about that development of relationships with sources?
I will say that I have met a lot of cool people through doing this account and some pretty reliable sources. That's all I'll say.
I mean, does that make it a little more fun for you sometimes?
I mean, listen, I just consider myself a human message board. You know, I'm not really editorializing any of this information. I try to give limited opinion, personal opinions on things. It's just basically a live message board. To me, like, I don't see the attraction of my identity.
So it's less about... If I hear you correctly, you want to protect the anonymity of your sources. I get that. But the anonymity of Dumois has less to do with protecting your identity and maybe just removing your identity as a factor altogether. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I don't think it plays into the storytelling. That's what I'll say. It's a non-factor for me. It's not anything that would add value to what I'm posting. So why even put myself out there?
Well, Emma asks on Instagram, what is the point of blind items? I don't understand them at all. Is it to just protect the informant's identity? Because if you're familiar enough with the topic to accurately guess who the blind item is about, then what's the point of anonymity in the first place? What's your response to Emma?
Yes, it's to protect the source. A lot of times people ask me to redact the names. And it's also to protect myself from, you know, any legal implications. And listen, I didn't invent the blind item. People get so upset about the blind items, but there are whole websites dedicated to blind items.
Well, and just for clarification, for people who are not familiar with the Dumois account, or just explain what a blind item is.
So a blind item is a piece of gossip where the subject's name has been redacted. And usually there'll be some sort of descriptor where the reader can try to figure out who it's about. So, like, it might say A-list action movie star. That would be the descriptor of who it's about, but the person's actual name won't be included.
Well, because this is public radio, I'd love to end on this question from Amy. They ask on Twitter, does she ever get NPR gossip? I saw Ari Shapiro getting coffee once. He is stunning in real life. So Dumois, any NPR personalities on your radar?
No, not at the moment, but I will definitely keep my ears open now, for sure.
Well, I don't necessarily want to encourage that. And I will just say right up front, my life is very, very boring, unless you're interested in tiny dogs. That's anonymous creator behind the Dumois Instagram account. Dumois, thanks for talking with us.
Okay, thank you.
Coming up, we go from the internet's relationship to celebrities' relationships to the internet. We talk with the co-hosts of the podcast Who Weekly about the last year of following celebrities who are extremely online. I'm Jen White. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Hint, fruit-infused water with no calories or sweeteners. Hint water comes in over 25 flavors. The watermelon water actually tastes like watermelon. The blackberry water tastes like blackberries. Hint is water with a touch of true fruit flavor. You can get Hint water at stores, or you can have it delivered directly to your door. When you buy 2 cases, you'll get a 3rd case free and free shipping. Visit drinkhint.com and use promo code NPR at checkout.
What happens after a police officer shoots someone who's unarmed? For decades in California, internal affairs investigations, how the police themselves, were secret. Until now. Listen to On Our Watch, a podcast from NPR and KQED.
This message comes from NPR sponsor USC Marshall School of Business. Discover where today's leadership innovations meet tomorrow's critical business challenges. USC Marshall School of Business Executive Education is where business professionals go for lifelong learning and career transformation. The short course, Purpose-Driven Leadership, delivers insights for creating trust, respect, influence, and collaboration while identifying your leadership purpose. Explore this and other programs at uscexecutiveeducation.com.
I'm Jen White. This is 1A. It's been over a year since the Imagine video hit our timelines.
Imagine there's no heaven.
It's easy if you try.
No hell below us.
Above us only sky.
Imagine all the people
living for today.
The viral video featured actor Gal Gadot and a couple dozen of her A-lister friends singing into their phones as a gesture of togetherness, and hasn't gotten any easier to listen to. Her intentions may have been good, but the gesture was just that, an empty gesture. It wasn't connected to raising money for charity or to any kind of pandemic aid. And that's part of why it backfired spectacularly. Celebrity blunders captured on social media have quickly become a pandemic-era staple, from the Kardashians escaping on a private island getaway, to Ellen comparing her mansion to jail, and to Madonna calling COVID the great equalizer in her rose-petaled bathtub. Every month, we go extremely online and talk about the internet ecosystem. Today, we're focusing on the internet and celebrity. How has our relationship with celebrity changed? And how is the internet changing the way we think about fame? Here to talk about it with us are Lindsay Weber and Bobby Finger. They're the hosts of Who Weekly, a podcast about celebrity gossip and culture. Lindsay, Bobby, thanks for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
So Bobby, why have humans always been simultaneously drawn to and repulsed by celebrity?
I'm already laughing at that for some reason. I think it's because there's an aspirational element of it at the forefront, I think. There's something about being rich and famous that is maybe a desire in all of us or in many of us. We just would like the experience of it. We would like to see if it works well enough, if it looks well on us. So I think that's where it begins. But also just because entertainment makes these people accessible to us almost 24/7 now. You know, for as long as we wanted to be entertained, we've been fascinated by the people doing the entertaining.
Now, Lindsay, the pandemic has had a lot of us glued to the internet. People are bored. We're online all the time. One of the sign-offs for your podcast is even Living La Vida laptop. But how has celebrity gossip and celebrity ridicule intensified because of that?
I mean, people are bored. We're looking for anything to do. But I also just think we're also more critical about the people around us because we're paying more attention. So our friends, our family, but also that means celebrities, because ultimately they're in the ecosystem with those people. They're in the same Instagram feed. So I just think that it's just because there's not a ton to do. And all of a sudden we're all focused on a new screen, not just TV, but also our phones and everything that's going on social media.
Well, for people who aren't familiar, what do you talk about on your podcast Who Weekly, Lindsay?
Oh, so many ridiculous things. But ultimately, the focus of the podcast is kind of the difference between a who and a them, which we love to focus on, a ridiculous thing to break down because there's so many nuances. But you know what? Sometimes you got to categorize people into who are they and, oh, I know them. And that's where the inspiration for the podcast came, because we saw so many celebrities, and we love celebrities, but we saw so many that we truly did not know. And so we went on a mission to find out who they were.
Okay, so to give people a quick idea of how the who versus them works. Some of these people I know, some of them, honestly, I don't. Okay, let's start with Tom Hiddleston. Is he a who or a them?
He's a
who.
That's
kind of tough.
I'm going to call him a who. And usually whenever it's tough, they're a who. When there's a question, we like to default to who.
We also do like to say, you know, if a celebrity is engaging in hooey behavior, are they dating another celebrity? Are they doing really weird sponsored advertisements? Are they messing up or doing certain types of we'll call it, oh, hooey. So there are them, but they're kind of doing hooey things. And also that can drag you into hoodom, you know?
I'm sorry, this just turned into a Dr. Seuss book, but that's okay.
I'm telling you.
The language is like impossible to get out of your head once you start using it.
What about Olivia Rodrigo? Who were them?
We were just talking about her. I think she's like them. She's almost them status right now at this
point. She's them ascendant, yes.
Okay, what about Trisha Paytas?
She's a who. That's a who. Big I love who. Her, but she's a who.
Famous on YouTube, you are a who.
Okay, so who is a them? Like, if you think about a them, who comes to mind for you first, Bobby?
The first one that comes to mind is Rihanna, just instantly. And I think one of the hallmarks of a them is this sort of is that untouchable status. They feel so many celebrities these days want to seem relatable. They want to seem like you can comment on their posts and that the celebrity will read them and maybe even respond. The themiest thems do not even pretend to be relatable.
Lindsay, what about for you?
I immediately think of like Tom Hanks. I think of just like older movie stars. I do think that kind of the movie star generation is slowly not as much of a thing anymore, as celebrities kind of don't have that like Angelina Jolie, Brad Pitt type vibe anymore, because they just do so much more stuff and there's so many more places to put work that's not just in the movie theater. But I always think of just kind of the names that everybody knows.
I mean, but when I think about somebody like Tom Hanks, who is, yeah, he's uber famous, but also really relatable. He loves typewriters. He guest hosts Wait, Don't Tell Me. Back when I was working in Chicago and when he hosted the show, he talked about how nobody at the station really approached him to meet him and how he was kind of like, wow, do these people not know who I am? And it was really funny because we were all just trying to give the man some space. So like,
I was like, people know who you are.
Of course we know who you are. You're Tom Hanks. But where is the threshold for them behavior?
I guess like when we talk about relatability, we're not necessarily talking about like, you know, I'm just like you. I also love the Yankees or something, like in terms of a trait. I think we're more talking about just, you know, being access almost, you know, like I don't have access to Tom Hanks and nor should I. But I do think that these kind of newer celebrities are told by lots of people, oh, people need to think they have access to you. You need to go live on Instagram. You need to answer. You need to reply on Twitter. You need to do all these things that directly engage them. You need to do cameos. You need to do all these things. And I think that maybe is the difference. Tom Hanks is not out here. He knows he doesn't have to do that specifically.
Well, we mentioned the Imagine video and Jordan posted on Facebook. It was nice that we all hated the same thing. That's rare these days. We also mentioned Kim Kardashian receiving huge backlash for her post about going to a private island to celebrate her birthday. In normal times, Bobby, you know, this would seem like typical celebrity behavior, but why do you think they receive such harsh criticism?
They received harsh criticism because we were all so uncertain about what the future held. We were so nervous in those early months of the pandemic, and to see celebrities acting like everything was going to be fine. When we're looking for experts, you know, we're looking to the Dr. Fauci types. We want to be told what's happening. There was so little clarity early on. And to have celebrities sort of make the assumption that they were the ones who had the answers, I think to me specifically, was, and I think offensive is the word. I was like, why do you think you are the ones who should be telling me, you know, what I need to hear right now? What gives you the expertise that I'm not getting from anywhere else?
Lindsay, at the same time, I think about the way celebrities are used to promote certain messages about the pandemic, encouraging people to get vaccinations, to wear masks. So where is that line?
I just think at that time when the Imagine video came out, no one knew any information about anything. And so if you're going to have a huge audience and you know that's they were like, we're going to have a huge audience and make people happy. It's like, no, why don't you figure out some information or something to share that's of use, because people are scared. They're not, you know, looking to you for entertainment on this right now, or like a heartwarming moment when there was no information. I think also people saw all those celebrities at their big houses with their, you know, big backyards with their gorgeous estates and said, you know what? I don't want to say this. Now's not the time for like an AD tour, an architectural digest tour of your property. Like I am in my apartment and I've been here for months. And so I just think that all of this mixed together, I mean, now, yes, obviously we want as many people in public to say I am getting vaccinated as possible. But at that time, there was no information that that was like the right thing to do. So they were kind of just doing nothing. And that I think is the hardest thing to swallow.
Scott posted on Facebook, I'm tired of performative caring because I'm skeptical or outright disbelieving of it. That goes for corporations as well as celebrities. Put your time and or your money where your mouth is and don't trumpet your deeds or pat yourself on the back. Bobby, often celebrities are a source of entertainment and distraction, but in times of crisis, what do you think is the best way for them to respond?
When you have a message, when you have something that you know could actually help people, then I think you can say something. Like if you have like actionable items or something that has actually been done, whenever you just start speaking for the sake of hearing your own voice or because you feel like you have to meet this Twitter quota or Instagram quota a certain number of times, then the message gets muddled. We don't really know why you're talking. So if you have a message like go get vaccinated or hey, go to this food bank, those sorts of, if you want to do charity, it should have an actual actionable item or actionable message attached to it.
For our latest Extremely Online, we're talking about the state of celebrity during the pandemic with Lindsay Weber and Bobby Finger, the hosts of the Who Weekly podcast. I'm Jen White. We'll hear more from you and our guests in a moment.
Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Jo knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult.
What happens after a police officer shoots someone who's unarmed? For decades in California, internal affairs investigations, how the police police themselves, were secret. Until now. Listen to On Our Watch, a podcast from NPR and KQED.
We're talking about how the pandemic is changing the way we think about celebrity with Lindsay Weber and Bobby Finger. They're the hosts of Who Weekly, a podcast about celebrity gossip and culture. We're also hearing from you.
Hi, this is Audrey calling from Springfield, Illinois. My relationship with celebrities changed during the pandemic because occasionally I would follow people on Instagram and laugh at their antics. And I was interested to see where they lived and what their family looked like. And honestly, as their posts became more and more forlorn due to the pandemic, I was no longer interested.
Guy tweets, my pandemic moment was Dave Chappelle's 8:46. That was a wonderful speech which was needed. His connection to his community as well as pandemic response temperature readings and masking was heartwarming. This video is historic. And another of you tweeted some pushback against the hate for the Imagine video. You say, I liked the Imagine video. Not everything has to be 100% perfect. It was fun and cute, and I appreciated all these famous people doing something for free just to make people smile. Well, while many celebrities' projects were put on hold due to the pandemic and interest in their lives waned for some of you, a lot of online influencers didn't miss a beat. Bobby, what's your take on internet influencers? These are, you know, people who've gained massive popularity on social media like Twitter and YouTube or TikTok. Are they celebrities or are they something different?
I think if you asked me this 5 years ago when we started the podcast, I would say they were something different, but I think they are just celebrities. I think it's just a new avenue for celebrity. Just a few days ago, we got sent an Architectural Digest open door video, which is a pretty, you know, high production value. You expect A to B listers to be on there. And there was someone on there that I had never heard of named Brett Man Rock. And I thought, who is this? And it turns out he's a YouTube influencer, he's a beauty influencer. And he has, you know, millions and millions of followers. And I think there's an impulse to say that these non-traditional avenues towards celebrities don't count or count less. But really, they have fans that are just as passionate, if not more passionate. So, yeah, they are celebrities.
But even with millions of followers, you know, influencers can sometimes feel like a flash in the pan. How durable is internet fame, Lindsay?
You know, that's a great question. I mean, everyone always asks, you know, references the 15 minutes of fame, and now it's 5 minutes of fame. Then it's, you know, 60 seconds of fame on TikTok or however many seconds you have on each platform that you're working on. I think there are influencers are finding more and more ways to stay longer. And I think that's because of the many different platforms they have, as well as, you know, the idea that followers mean something. But I think you only have as much attention as people are willing to give you. And if you do one shtick and then you don't do that shtick again, or you can't find another shtick, people will find somebody else.
Well, TikToker Addison Rae went on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, and she did these, you know, viral dances, but didn't credit the creators of the dances she did. Jake Paul is being investigated by Puerto Rican officials for driving on a beach with protected sea turtles. Lindsay, how closely linked is influencer fame and scandal?
I mean, of course it's closely linked. These are young people, like, you know, not to age myself, but you're naming people who are young, and young people, when they're famous, make a ton of mistakes. They do things that are ill-advised. They don't listen to the people around them, and they have too much money and they don't know what to do with it. So of course that's what happens. It happened with young actors back in the day, young musicians. It happens with influencers as well.
Bobby, internet influencers, we should say, also wield some power. President Obama met with YouTube stars to push Obamacare. Dr. Fauci and President Biden hosted a YouTube town hall this week to answer questions about COVID vaccines. Where do you see that link between, you know, politics and internet influencers?
I think the link is there if the influencer is willing to make it. I think that it makes sense that political administrations would reach out to people with a younger audience to sort of like tap into that for the sake of their own messaging. But also, I think it's a place where you have to be a little more careful. I think obviously it's a great choice. It's a great choice to reach out to young people using the people that the entertainers that they turn to. But also, because of the nature of their fame, because it involves oversharing, because it involves kind of this minefield of very kind of transparent personal drama, there's more of a risk of maybe getting yourself involved with someone who is more susceptible to drama than your more traditional celebrity, because again, those traditional celebrities have the more traditional support systems attached to them.
Lindsay, do you see traditional celebrity and internet celebrity as separate spheres, or are they overlapping more and more? Because when you said, Bobby, internet drama, I was talking to my goddaughter the other day, and she was trying to explain some sort of, I think it was TikTok drama, and I had no idea what the baby was talking about. But she was trying really hard to explain it to me. But you can kind of fall down this rabbit hole trying to unravel some of this stuff. And it feels a little different when we're talking about traditional celebrity. What do you think, Lindsay?
I mean, people tend to forget that, you know, nowadays, because of how many resources you have, you can really have small communities of fandom. And I think it's like we expect, you know, this celebrity to have millions and millions and millions of fans, or everyone knows who they are. But what we found through our podcast is that you can have 5,000 fans and make a living. You can, if they're each giving you $10, if you can have, you know, you can just have these small pockets of fans and do so well and have a whole career. And so sometimes when I don't know who somebody is, I think, well, they're probably doing amazing because they have created this niche community and I've never even heard of them.
Samantha tweets, what celebrity has gotten it right? Bobby?
Well, there are certain shades of getting it right. You know, there's getting it right in the frequent poster way, and there's getting it right in that that rarity way, that rarer way. And, you know, people who've gotten it right, one of them, I think, is Martha Stewart. Martha Stewart has maintained this very weird, specific voice on social media, on celebrity, and like despite all the tumult of her life, she has maintained this kind of bizarre, interesting presence online. No one's really speaking ill of her lately. And another one I think is just Beyonce, who is so famous, so successful. No one is saying that they can possibly relate to Beyonce's pandemic experience, but she's doing political messaging whenever she needs to. She's still posting those sort of aspirational, ridiculous photo shoots that make her seem, you know, completely, you know, rich and famous and fashionable and stylish, stylish. But we don't begrudge her for it. And I don't know. And then whenever you get into the lower tier of those people, like more hooey people, celebrities who are just having fun and revealing interesting truths about themselves in ways that, I don't know, are inspiring and emotional. I think a couple of those people are Elliot Page, who went through so much in this pandemic, in addition to, you know, what everyone else was going through with his transition and, you know, airing out all of the trauma that he's gone through in the industry. And also it makes me think of Niecy Nash also coming out in the middle of a pandemic and saying, you know what, I divorced my husband and now I'm married to this woman and we're having a good time. We're on lockdown together. Like, there are ways to do this right in ways that don't kind of raise alarm bells or make us roll our eyes. And that's just, those are the celebrities that came to the top of my head.
Okay, one more really quick who and them question. Is public radio a who or them?
You're
them. You're them.
Absolutely.
Forever.
Well, this last email from Mark, who says, Dolly Parton, she nailed doing it right during the pandemic. We've been talking to Lindsay Weber and Bobby Finger. They're the hosts of the podcast Who Weekly. Lindsay, Bobby, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Remember, we're on Instagram. You can follow us at The1A Show. Today's producers were Michelle Harvin and Catherine Fink. Barb Anguiano produces our podcast. This program comes to you from WAMU.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Hint, fruit-infused water with no calories or sweeteners. Hint water comes in over 25 flavors. The watermelon water actually tastes like watermelon. The blackberry water tastes like blackberries. Hint is water with a touch of true fruit flavor. You can get Hint water at stores, or you can have it delivered directly to your door. When you buy two cases, you'll get a third case free and free shipping. Visit drinkhint.com and use promo code NPR at checkout.